From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Maintaining fitness later in life can be challenging. In our first half hour, we'll talk with Warren Franke, professor of kinesiology at Iowa State University's Exercise Clinic, about new studies concerning the importance of exercise in our golden years. We'll also talk with 84-year-old Jack Knopfnagel about his weekly exercise regime. Then in the second half hour, a conversation with Mildred Pierce, a centenarian living in Cedar Falls. Sunday, she celebrated her 101st birthday. Mildred will share some reflections from her life, including her work as a young woman playing piano for silent movies. That's all coming up. First, a look at the news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, how to live a long and happy life. At least a few thoughts on that. Later in the hour, a conversation with Mildred Pierce, a centenarian living in Cedar Falls. Sunday, she celebrated her 101st birthday. Mildred, in a conversation, will share some reflections from her life, including her work as a young woman playing piano for silent movies in Iowa. But first, maintaining fitness later in life can be challenging. That's the focus of our first half hour, staying fit while you're getting older. My guests are Warren Franke, professor of kinesiology and director of Iowa State University's Exercise Clinic. Good afternoon to you, Professor.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And also joining us, Jack Knopfnagel, an 84-year-old who keeps up with his fitness and is here to tell us about that. We're also reaching out to our listeners. Jack, welcome to our program.
Oh, thank you.
We're also reaching out to our listeners. Are you in your golden years? What's your key to maintaining an active, healthy lifestyle? Was there a turning point at which you turned to some sort of workout to improve your lifestyle, improve your health? We want to hear about that. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Jack, if we could start with you. You are almost 85 years old, and I understand that you go to a gym in Iowa City three times a week. How did that start?
Well, it goes back 6 years, to be precise, six years ago next month. Two friends with whom I had done a lot of long-distance bicycling before, had been urging me to join them in working out in a gymnasium. And they had settled in at the what is at that time was a newly opened CORE right here in Iowa City. And the gymnasium, the fitness center, was offering making an introductory offer of 2 weeks of free membership to give it a try. Well, they sent me a coupon for these 2 weeks, and so I took it up. And at the end of the 2 weeks, I had to make my decision. Would I keep this up? Or would I let it drop? I was tempted to let it drop because we had to get up very early in the morning, and it wasn't really all that much fun. On the other hand, there was some fun to it. In any case, the answer is I decided to continue. So I took out a regular membership, and since that time, I've been working out with them three times a week for about an hour and a half.
Uh-huh. And you say you get up early to do this. What does your workout look like? Walk us through that quickly.
Well, we begin with what the our coach, that's one of the men, calls a cardio, either a treadmill or stationary bike or elliptic, something to warm you up. Then we move on to a set of exercises. These are arranged in cycles. Each cycle has three sets, and one set of exercises per day.
And so you have a nice variety.
Oh, yes, a variety. Always different, except we always begin with bench press. And then we move on to other things, some involving weightlifting, some working on on the machines, you know. Sometimes we just get down on the floor and do push-ups or bicycles or something like that.
Nearly 85. How many push-ups can you do, Jack?
Well, I can do as many as you wish if I cheat. I should tell you, one of my colleagues at the gym is a retired professor of music. And you know, for musicians, form is everything.
Right.
And he has been a great and rigid and demanding coach for doing things in the right way. To give a simple example, the push-up. the body has to be straight as a board.
Yes.
And you have to drop down till your nose touches the floor, or practically. And that's a real push-up. Now, you can cheat by letting the torso sag and just coming down halfway. And when he's not looking, I'll cheat a little bit.
Okay. I think everyone listening will keep that secret. Yeah. So that he doesn't find out. So after you've been doing this for 6 years, before we go to Warren Franke to get a bigger picture of this, how would you say your well-being, your fitness, also mental fitness, has changed since you started these regular workouts?
Well, my physical fitness has improved. First of all, I was surprised to find after about 2 or 3 months that I had lost 10 pounds.
Mm, just like that.
And second, I had, at the time I began, a condition in my back or legs that prevented me from walking properly. It has been diagnosed with a name which I cannot possibly remember, but I simply could not walk fast, and I found it difficult to climb stairs. And this surprised me. Well, that condition disappeared. Totally disappeared. My walking, my stair climbing are not impeded in the least.
Mm. Warren Franke, let's turn to you, professor of kinesiology and director of Iowa State University's Exercise Clinic, after hearing Jack Nothnagel's testimonial to keeping fit into your later years. This is of interest to you because you do research about the relationship between centenarians on their fitness and the perceptions they have of their health. Tell us what you found out in your research.
Well, I've been working with some colleagues, most notably Peter Martin and Jennifer Margaret, looking at centenarians in the broader picture, and I'm being the exercise guy. That's kind of been my focus. And what we've seen with the recent research is that, as with younger old adults, there's a bit of a variety in centenarians in terms of how active they are. But as you can imagine, kind of the scale or the range is skewed down. You don't see many centenarians running marathons. But what we've seen is kind of an interesting discrepancy between what you expect to see with younger old adults and these oldest old adults. Typically, Jack's a poster child for this. As you become more active with age, you start to see the benefits of it. You know, your activities of daily living become easier. Some aches and pains, just some challenges you may have had, tend to go away. But what we've seen with this early research is almost a difference in that. We asked a relatively small group of centenarians what were their functional limitations, what could they do, what could not they do, in their daily lives. And what we found was pretty surprising. It was almost an inverse association between the activity levels of the centenarians and their functional limitations, which is totally counter to what I expected to see.
For example, what do you mean?
Well, again, it's not like these centenarians were really exercising per se. In fact, some of them didn't even get out of a chair. They had no steps over the course of a day. But then a small group were active. But what we saw is the more active centenarians felt that they had more functional limitations. They felt more constrained.
Even though they probably weren't objectively seen, it's just that they were now focused on their physical health, do you think?
Right. Peter and Jennifer, Dr. Martin and Dr. Margaret and I discussed this because this was not at all what I expected to see. And we don't really know, but kind of the consensus that we've come up with is we're thinking because they're more active, they expect themselves to be able to do more, and when they can't, they experience more limitations. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, if someone knows they can get out of a chair, but it's difficult for them to do so, they're more frustrated than someone who can't get out of a chair but doesn't try.
Mm-hmm. Jack, in talking about his workouts, mentioned his coach there, and I'm sure that the workouts that he has every week are tailored to his age. What should someone who is in 70s, 80s, and beyond keep in mind when saying, okay, let me do some exercise? Do you necessarily need a coach, or are there tips you can give us, a direction you can give us?
Yeah. First thing to remember is age is not a medical condition. A lot of people, that's their first answer, I'm too old to exercise. And it's not true. I mean, Jack's a great example of that. But obviously, as you get older, there are some diseases that crop up that younger people don't expect to have, or you don't normally see. in your youth, like cardiovascular disease, arthritis, osteoporosis. You typically see those as people become older. And so what I'm getting at is if someone is an older adult and they've been relatively inactive, before they start, they should probably have a quick visit with their personal physician to make sure that it is okay for them to begin exercising. They don't have some other medical condition that may make it inappropriate or perhaps that may make them think twice about what they need to do. Mm-hmm. For example, if someone has arthritis or osteoporosis perhaps, a high-impact aerobic class, probably not the best idea for them. Mm-hmm. Whereas the class that Jack's going through sounds like it'd be spot on.
Mm-hmm. You are director of Iowa State University's Exercise Clinic, and tell us first the clinic's mission.
Well, we have multiple missions. It's an outreach mission in terms of serving the community, either both on campus and off campus, and providing what I hope is a high-quality exercise outlet. We fulfill part of the teaching mission of my Department of Kinesiology in that our kinesiology undergraduates and some of our graduate students essentially do an on-campus internship within the exercise clinic before they go out and do their field experience. And then it also serves as a venue for research. We can do training studies in the facility, too.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that everyone who comes to the clinic undergoes an assessment. What are you assessing, particularly when you look at people who are in their elder years?
Well, first off, is do they have any medical conditions that would warrant either modifying an exercise program or perhaps referring them to a more medically based exercise program, or if it's appropriate for them to exercise with us, things that we need to take into account. Mm-hmm. And so we review a medical history frequently. We also get their personal physician's input. So to be honest, we don't do anything that we shouldn't do. And then assuming they pass muster there, then we typically do a fitness assessment. There's five components of fitness, cardiovascular fitness, muscular strength, muscular endurance, flexibility, body composition. We assess them, try to identify areas that may warrant improvement. And then, of course, when people come, they always have goals. You know, there's always something that they want to achieve. And then we try to see how much of a match or a mismatch there is between the things they need to work on as identified by the fitness assessment and things they want to work on as identified by their goals. And usually there is virtually no mismatch. They're one and the same. Mm-hmm. And then we develop an exercise program, an exercise prescription, so to speak, to help them get where they need to go. And then with our exercise classes, which parallel largely the classes that Jack goes through at Iowa City, I have undergraduates as they do their internship, graduate students that serve as exercise leaders for the classes. They help mentor or shepherd our participants as they get underway.
What if you're not an elderly person, a senior in Iowa City or in Ames or in a main city where there is not a health club or a gym readily accessible? Some people don't drive anymore. They have trouble getting around. What's the solution there, or is that a real obstacle you see in the state?
It's a huge obstacle. I mean, that's a big part of Dr. Martin's, Dr. Margaret's, and my research, how to serve rural older adults, which is exactly as you described. A lot of the research looking at the benefits of physical activity or exercise in older adults, frequently, if they're interventions, almost by definition, they've involved relatively urban older adults because they can come to the facility. Mm-hmm. And so a largely underserved group of older adults are rural older adults, you know, the ones that have the barriers. Either they're unable to drive, they choose not to drive because of weather conditions or for what have you. And so they have challenges. If they do want to exercise, they have challenges getting underway. And so
what's the solution then?
That's an excellent question. In the short term, what I suggest to people, like when I go out and give kind of public talks, is the National Institutes of Aging, a federal agency. They have a wonderful, wonderful booklet you can download, or they'll send you a free copy of it that will help you. It's almost a self-guided tutorial in terms of how to develop an in-home exercise program. To find it, it's very simple. Just Google exercise for older adults and National Institutes of Aging, and you'll find their website. It's just a PDF file. And essentially what they do is they help people kind of do the screening on their own that I described, not so much the fitness test, but to identify whether or not it's medically appropriate for them to exercise, then it helps them identify what they can do in the home. And a big part of the exercises, because they're in the home, are largely focused on improving muscular strength or muscular endurance and balance, because obviously as you get older, balance becomes an increasingly major issue in being able to stay in your home.
Jack, you mentioned that you work out with a couple of friends, and in fact, it was a couple of friends who encouraged you to start those 6 years ago. So it's really the motivation for you. I imagine, you know, if you were just yourself going to the workout some days, you wouldn't feel like so much like it. So it's important for you to work in a group so you get up and see your friends?
Yes, it certainly is. I've often thought of that. Without their company, I don't know if I would have the character, if you will, to get up early in the morning and cycle off down the road and do those exercises all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I have done it a few times, of course, when they were off doing other things, but I don't think I would have quite the strength to keep it up by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say that.
What is Warren Frankie, what do you say about that, the idea of working out with a friend or two as a part of motivation and a part of the enjoyment of doing it?
It's a fabulous idea. Social support, a buddy system, if you will, is a fantastic way to continue to exercise. I mean, as Jack described, what got him to begin exercising, some friends kind of dragged him, so to speak, to the fitness center, and what continues for him to go. He has his friends to work with. You develop a social network. In fact, in my exercise program, if somebody's missing for a day or two, frequently other participants will say, "We're so-and-so. What's happened to them?"
Mm-hmm.
And by the same token, they'll say, "Oh, so-and-so, they're a snowbird. You know, they're on vacation. They're visiting their children. They'll be back." And so that social support system is a powerfully effective tool for continuing to exercise.
Right, and we also know from other studies in longevity that the social networks are one of the keys to living into an older age.
Oh, you're exactly right. In fact, it's my undergrads, I have them assess their internship experience, and a frequent comment they make is something effective. A lot of these older adults, they tend to talk a lot but don't work out a whole lot, and I'm okay with that for exactly that reason. It's a social environment that maybe is helpful for them as the activity environment. It's a powerful thing.
How much does the role of staying physically fit into keeping mentally fit?
There's overlap. There really is. When you exercise, you can increase brain blood flow, and so there is overlap. There's also studies that support the idea of you need to do mental exercises, brain exercises, things like crossword puzzles where you have some mental stimulation that helps with what people typically say is the decline as you get older. Mm. It's as much inactive, the decline, be it physical or mental, for many folks is as much a lifestyle thing as it is an aging thing, meaning as people get older, they tend to become less active. And the side effects of that inactivity they ascribe to aging, and really it's not that at all. It's the fact they're relative couch potatoes.
Mm-hmm. How, Jack, if we would condemn you to be a couch potato, you didn't get out with your friends to work out three times a week, how do you think it would change you now almost at the age of 85?
Well, I really don't know. I think there would be some deterioration. As I told you, I had a couple of conditions that I was living with that went away from as a result of exercising. So I could expect that if I remained a couch potato, I would develop other things that spoiled my quality of living.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about, before we have to end this conversation, about fitness. You know, Jack, you mentioned it seemed like you were almost unaware of it, or lo and behold, right after starting to work out 3 months down the road, you lost 10 pounds.
Yes.
And I assume, did you think about your diet at the same time you started working out, or did that just come as a byproduct?
Not at all. It was just a surprise, a very pleasant surprise to me.
Mm-hmm. So have you changed your diet in the meantime, or has that pretty much been consistent?
No, not at all. My diet continues the same. I think I eat a little less than I did in my earlier years, but I continue to eat a variety of foods.
Professor Frankie, what role does diet play when in establishing an exercise regimen?
Well, they overlap, of course, because a healthy diet, healthy exercise habits lead to a healthy person. But if someone's trying to lose weight, they kind of go hand in hand. I mean, typically if someone's trying to lose weight, they need to modify their eating behaviors, modify their exercise behaviors. But in Jack's case, it was a pleasant surprise. He just increased his caloric expenditure, and lo and behold, he lost some weight, which is wonderful. But typically, if someone's trying to lose weight, you kind of have to do both. Dieting alone, exercise alone can be effective weight loss programs, but if you do them both together, it's both, relatively speaking, easier for the person who's doing them, and it's more beneficial in the long run.
Warren Franke, you are a professor of kinesiology, which, what loosely translated, is human movement, right?
Right, study of human movement.
So many of us, and getting broadening it out a little bit to those of us who are in middle age or even young, have sedentary work styles, sitting in front of computers for hours each day, for years, even decades, as part of our careers. Humans weren't really built to do that. Our bodies were not built to sit in that position, were they?
No. From an evolutionary perspective, we're designed to move. And so this enforced inactivity is not a very healthy behavior for us. And actually, recent studies are starting to show that even if someone is basically a desk jockey and they graph onto that an artificial movement pattern, meaning they go to a gym, they work out, while that's very healthy, it's the appropriate thing to do, other studies are starting to reinforce the idea that you need to have almost activity over the course of a day, meaning you need to get up and move every now and then.
How often should you get up if you have an eight-hour workday? How often should you be getting up from your chair to do something?
It's tough to say. I mean, if someone put a gun to my head, I'd say you need to do at least every hour. If it's nothing more than getting up and walking down the hallway, just to stretch your legs, get the blood flowing a little bit, just to change the environment by going outside, almost every hour.
What are the problems that are typically crop up if we don't get up, if we just continue to stay a desk jockey, and we're actually even younger?
Yeah, well, in the short term, not a whole lot, which is why a lot of people are relatively unmotivated to be physically active. But the lifestyle that you can get away with as you get younger, as you become middle-aged and older, it starts to crop up in terms of deterioration of your body. About half of the declines in muscular strength, lung function, lots of different aspects of your body that occur over time are because of inactivity, not because of aging. And so you see that people that are relatively have an unhappy retirement from a physical perspective, meaning they're unhealthy, they're paying the price of behaviors that they initiated 30, 40 years ago. And so it's important, if you want to have a happy retirement, to start thinking about that far, far, far before that day comes.
Establish those exercise patterns early on. I want to thank you. We've run out of time. Warren Franke, professor of kinesiology, director of Iowa State University's Exercise Clinic. Thank you, Warren, for joining us.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
And, of course, thanks to Jack Nothnagel, our poster child, and 84 years old, keeping up with your fitness, Jack. We wish you a long and healthy and fit life. Thank you for sharing your story on our show today.
You're very welcome.
Coming up, a conversation with Mildred Pierce, a centenarian living in Cedar Falls. Sunday, she celebrated her 101st birthday. She'll share some reflections in a conversation I had with her from this past summer. That coming up in just a moment. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. You may remember back in the summer, we looked at the challenges the elderly can face when they want to continue living in their homes. As part of that program, I spoke with Mildred Pierce, a remarkable centenarian who lives in Cedar Falls. In fact, earlier this week, Mildred celebrated her 101st birthday. In continuing our discussion today about centenarians living a long and happy life, we want to listen to another part of my conversation with Mildred that didn't get aired in the summer, a conversation in which I simply asked her to reflect on her 10 decades of living in Iowa. I began that part of our talk by asking her where she grew up.
In northwest Iowa. I've lived in Iowa all my life, So I grew up in a town called Sanborn, Iowa, which is west of Spencer, and it's flat country up there. And during the dust storms, you know, just blew.
So this was later in the, more into the 30s that you had dust storms?
Yes. That was when I was teaching in a rural school in O'Brien County during those heavy dust storms of the early 30s, late 20s, you know, that went swept across Iowa. And it was not fun at all because, you know, I'd come to the school in the morning and I'd have to clean everything because the dust had blown in at night. And so that's my early experiences in career-wise. But I grew up in this small town in Iowa.
Let's go a little earlier before that. What are some of your earliest memories that might surprise our listeners and really give an insight into the times that you were born into?
Well, it's so almost impossible to talk about the differences because there are so many. But I worked during high school in a grocery store, and the only ripe fruit we had was bananas, you know. And look at what's going on today in terms of all the fresh fruit. And I didn't have any candy when I was growing up, like kids have today all the time. And I was one of five children, and my father was a railroad engineer, so he would charge groceries during the week, and then when his paycheck came, he'd go down to pay the bill, the grocery bill, and the grocer would give him a bag of candy, and he'd bring it home, and we'd sit around the table, and he would hand out one piece to each of us, you know, going around the circle. And then when we got through, we'd trade with each other to get to find the kind we liked. You know, now that, imagine today, the kids wouldn't have any idea of living like that.
Right. So your favorite type of candy at that time, what do you remember your favorite flavor?
Lemon drops. I still like lemon drops. So, no, it was an entirely different kind of life. You know, we didn't have any TV or we had radio, but it was politics mostly, and so we didn't listen to a lot of radio. But we played outside and had all kinds of outside games. And now today, children don't play those games outside anymore. You know,
not as much, certainly. They do a lot of things with screens, don't they? Do you think that comparing a childhood today with a childhood in the teens, well, what do you think about the childhood now versus when you were a kid 90 years ago?
It's hard to compare, but I think that children today are missing a lot because they don't have the outside play that we had. And in terms of health, it's very important. But they do have a lot of advantages because of the things that are available for children today. So I guess I'm glad I grew up when I did. But I think probably there are things today that are good too, but you just have to be very, very careful not to go too far.
I understand. Is it correct that you're a musician and you had at least at one point a job playing for silent movies?
Yes. When I graduated from high school, I wasn't old enough to teach in a rural school. That was my plan at that time. And so I stayed home and worked in the telephone office in the daytime and played for silent movies at night. And I'd get a script ahead of time of what kind of music I was supposed to have. And then often I didn't really see what was going on in the movie because I was following this script, you know.
And so what town would the movie house have been in?
In my hometown of Sanborn.
Mm-hmm. And so you're at the piano up near the screen, you're looking at the script, and your job was to sort of interpret the script and interpret the feeling of the pictures.
Yeah, and to tell you you should have fast music now or major drum beats or something like that would need to be available. And so it was challenging, but I enjoyed it.
And so the teaching then came after that. You got into teaching. How is being a teacher now different from then?
Well, you see, after I got married, I couldn't teach because I was married.
You couldn't teach because you got married?
Yeah. If married women couldn't teach because you were taking a job away from a man. And so,
that was the reasoning, and people thought that was okay.
Yes, they thought it was okay. And so I couldn't teach, so I did all kinds of things. Invented things to do, and during the war there was so much need for things that you didn't have any trouble finding a job to do. But then when my daughter entered college, she was younger, when she entered college, I went back to school and finished my BA and started teaching then. So that was the time of my life that I started teaching.
And eventually you became even a principal.
Yes.
At what school?
Humbert and Southdale.
Humbert and Southdale in Cedar Falls.
Yes. Yes. And then I decided that I was not going to work for the Cedar Falls schools anymore because they were paying men principals $600 more than they paid women principals, and they said they didn't have to defend that. So I decided that I was working on my EDS then, and so I decided to take a year and finish that. And I went up to register at the university, and the head of the education department asked me if I would be interested in teaching a year for a woman who was on sabbatical. And I taught, and then I stayed there, and so finished my career teaching at UNI.
So you, as someone who's had a long career, not only a long life of 100 years, but a long span of a career, you've had a great opportunity to observe firsthand the opportunities that are available to women today compared to yesteryear.
Yes, that certainly is true. Women were very limited in what they could do when I was growing up, and as I got into the workforce, you know, it wasn't like it is today at all.
Now, you and your husband had two children.
Yes.
And tell us about your children.
Well, my son was older, and he grew up here in Cedar Falls and was an English teacher in the Minneapolis schools.
Bob Pierce.
Bob Pierce, yes. Mm-hmm. And my daughter was a home ec major in college, but she decided that she couldn't teach because she had 1 year of experience teaching in a small Iowa town, and she decided teaching wasn't for her. So she went into library science, and she was a librarian and worked for many years in Hancock, New Hampshire, where they lived.
Mm-hmm. How old are they now?
My daughter is 75, and my son is 70, will be 78.
How are they doing?
Very well. My son has a health problem, but he's doing real well. Mm-hmm. And my daughter's in good health, and they are very active people. My daughter is very involved in music. My husband was a musician, and my first 2 years of college work was in the field of music, and so my kids came by it honestly. And my son has a beautiful voice, and my daughter sings constantly in a 150 voice choir and a small chamber choir that she's involved in. So they're both very involved with music.
Mildred, you, I was thinking in your lifetime, having been born in 1909, you have lived through 17 presidents, starting with Taft, Wilson, Harding, Coolidge, Hoover, Roosevelt, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush 1, Clinton, Bush 2, and now President Obama.
it's been interesting. You know, someone asked me when it was a doctor who asked me why I was the most thankful I lived to be 100 years old. And I said that the fact that Obama got elected president of the United States, and this sort of shocked him, but I said, you know, for me, that was, it wasn't political in the sense of Republican or Democrat. It was culture that we were able to elect an African-American to be president of the United States, I thought was really tremendous. And so that's sort of my take on politics.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of what the best presidents you've experienced? What have been the presidencies that you've thought that worked pretty well?
Well, Johnson did a lot of interesting things for people, but I don't know. I think, as a rule, presidents do the best they can, and circumstances tie their hands often and they're not able to do the things they'd like. And I think of Hoover as a very interesting man, and yet he doesn't have a very good reputation in terms of the history. And looking back to when I was younger, I thought that Roosevelt was really a great president because of the situation at the time he was president was so challenging.
If you've just joined us, as part of an hour that deals with living a long and happy life, we're listening back to a conversation I had this summer with centenarian Mildred Pierce of Cedar Falls. It's very trendy to be environment friendly these days, Mildred. But I have a feeling you are a vegetarian and you're very environmentally conscious, and this goes back a number of years.
Yes, for a long time. I was fortunate to have a mother who was interested in nature, and then I married a man who was just involved completely in nature, and always we didn't have a car, but we'd take our children when they were very young and go out into parks to picnic and things like that. So I was involved with him all the time. His work was with a florist. He worked for Bancroft's and for Flowerama and places like that, you know, his whole life. And so we've always been involved, and I hope very conscious of living as easily on nature as I can. Mm-hmm.
Do you think this has also contributed to your longevity, the fact that you're environmentally conscious and you think about your diet, for instance?
Well, my doctor has said, my doctor tells me that I probably lived to be 100 because I was a vegetarian. And I'm not a vegan. I use milk and eggs and things like that. But I don't eat anything that runs from me when I try to catch it for lunch.
That's your rule.
Yes. That's my rule.
Now, some people might not want to live to be 100 because, well, for one reason, that nearly all the people your age have passed already. Do you ever find yourself thinking that way?
No. I'm amazed that I lived to be 100. I still can't believe it, you know, because it doesn't seem real to me. But
in what way doesn't it seem real?
Well, time has passed so fast, and every year it goes faster.
And right, so this continues on. The summers we enjoyed as kids seemed endless, and then the years progress, and it's Christmas again, and it's the birthday of someone again. You want to tell me here and now that living to 100, it just gets faster and faster?
Oh, definitely faster and faster.
Now, how do you deal with it? You've had a lot of deaths in your family, no doubt. You've had a lot of contemporaries, people your age and even younger passing close to you. How do you deal with the death of others?
I don't know. I guess there's nothing you can do about it but accept the fact that the person is dead and has died. And consequently, you just learn to live with that. It hurts particularly when you lose good friends, you know, it's very troublesome. But that's just part of life.
Mm-hmm. Do you spend a lot of time thinking about death?
No. I think about death once in a while, basically wondering how it'll be to die. But I don't worry about it. Wouldn't do any good. Mm-hmm. And so I just don't think about it.
What are your thoughts about how you think it would be to die?
I believe that there is a sacred spirit in life, and consequently, I think that part of you lives on. And so I don't know, I have no idea what real death will be. And like I say, I don't worry about it.
With this long view on a century of life, what advice would you give someone in their 20s, 30s, even 40s who has quite a stretch of life out there about the way to live life? If you could concisely communicate that to someone, what would be your motto, your slogan?
Well, life is unpredictable, and you have to be willing to accept that fact, that you can make plans, but you can't always be sure that what you plan is going to happen for you. And you have to be willing to accept that and not be angry about it.
Do you have any regrets in your life?
Oh, always people have regrets, I'm sure about that. I told my daughter just recently that one of the things I regretted that I didn't tell my children often enough when they were growing up that I loved them, because I loved them and I took it for granted they knew that. And I don't think children do always know that. I'm hoping that my children knew that I loved them. And I still tell them I do, so I'm sure that so that's, I think, my greatest regret is that in bringing up my children, I would have done things differently if I had to do over.
If I had Mildred Pierce, as you are today, 100 years old, and then Mildred Pierce maybe in her 20s sitting next to you, and I could talk to you both, what in a conversation, what do you imagine would be the chief differences? How is she different than you are today in thinking, in the view of life, in approach to life?
Well, she wouldn't have been able to talk to you. She was very shy and very quiet, and she would have been frightened to death to talk.
But she wanted to be a school teacher.
Yeah. Well, I didn't understand what school teaching was all about either when I was in my teens, you know. I think you'd always think of it as when you're kids and you're playing, you line the kids up in little chairs and say, I'm the teacher.
And they all listen and pay attention.
Yeah. It's not like that at all.
Mildred, if you could revisit a past period in your life, one period, I'm not saying it's a year, maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's a week, maybe it's a month, maybe it's a year or 5 years, what period would you choose to relive?
Oh, it was a time where things were really rough for us, but life was good, and that was when my children were young. You know, we were married in 1930, the depths of the Depression, and life was pretty hectic, but it was simple then, and I didn't have the worries that I had as the children were growing up, and so that's the time that I would visit if I could go back.
Is there a period that you would not want to revisit if you could avoid it?
Oh, definitely. There are times that I made mistakes that I wish that I hadn't. I had known more and made wiser decisions. So there are things I regret, but I try not to think about that kind of thing because it doesn't do any good. It only makes you feel unhappy.
So the parts of the past, that anybody's regrets, you should sort of cast them aside. Maybe learn from them, but don't dwell on them.
Yeah, that's the way I feel about life.
Mm-hmm. Mildred, I want to thank you again for this conversation. It's been very enlightening to hear your views from your very long lifetime. Thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you here.
A conversation I had this summer with Mildred Pierce of Cedar Falls as part of our program today, which focused on health into old age. Earlier this week, Mildred celebrated her 101st birthday. So Mildred, if you're listening, belated happy birthday wishes from all of us at Iowa Public Radio. The Exchange is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange available at iowapublicradio.org. We love your comments and questions about this program. Contact us anytime. TheExchange@iowapublicradio.org is our email. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.